SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Coming up on 10 o'clock, we got about 5 minutes to the top of the hour, and just a little back and forth, quick text note. I reached out to Ron Geary this morning, and haven't had Ron on in ages. Literally, it may be 10 years since Ron Geary's joined us, and he can't do it today as they continue to finalize the deal that was confirmed and basically made the rounds yesterday. Ellis Park, the other 70% of the ownership stake that Geary has controlled will go to the minority partner. They're going to sell to the Saratoga Harness Track, the Saratoga Gaming team. And no major changes, no upheaval, nothing along those lines. But Geary now 71 and going to, I think, dial back a little bit. And his work, you know, during a rough patch, because there was a real concern going back 10 years. And when that's the last time we talked to Ron Geary on the air anyway, was about what future Ellis Park was facing. And there was an uncertainty. And, you know, much of what's happened in Kentucky in terms of the circuit, the breakthrough of the historic racing machines at Kentucky Downs, and that became a bit of a domino effect, helped, you know, the excess cash that Corey Johnson was able to, you know, steer toward Ellis and contribute to the purse account, and that stabilized things for Geary and his team. And, you know, from there it's been a step-by-step progress between, you know, the machines at Ellis, and Turfway is next, and going to guarantee a future, it appears, for Turfway as well. So there's been a very heartening story, because Ellis is a success. I mean, it's an important cog in the Kentucky circuit this time of year, and it's also got a great tradition of its own that's approaching 100 years. And, you know, that in that region, in Evansville and the environs, it's really a treasured part of the summer. And as we've talked, it's become a hotbed of young horses getting ready and then, you know, emerging into the fall and going forward. So we'll talk to Ron Geary as early as next week. And this is bad news. Pete Fornatel joining us. And Pete, I'm gonna send a shot across the bow of contest players, because Geary is a tremendous handicapper and contest player, and has qualified any number of times. And I think once this deal is signed off and all the paperwork is filed and the checks are exchanged, Ron Geary can go back to qualifying for NHC and anything else he wants, because he's on leaderboards when he puts his mind to it.
Absolutely. I met him many moons ago at, I believe it was a contest at Fairplex Park, his name at the top of the leaderboard, and I found it so interesting, long before I was involved in contests, but that somebody on the inside of the industry was taking such an interest in this little corner, and man, has it grown since. It'll be great to have him. I feel like he's eligible to play in here and there right now, but the idea of getting him back, being able to be more active, will be terrific, and I've never actually done a proper interview with him, And I think after he wins a contest in short order, I'll have to do that in the pages of Daily Racing Form.
I'm in the same frame of mind. I want to, you know, kind of get a bit of a retrospective kind of a session in with Ron Geary, because it's been so long since we've had him on, and you know, he secured the future for Ellis, and you know, he put up some of his own money that sort of saw them through a tough patch, and seems like, you know, there's a bright future moving forward for Ellis. So, speaking of bright futures, Harvey Pack. he ends every conversation, you know, with the same suggestion that, you know, that this will be his last appearance. But if anything, he's gathering momentum, because I understand he put a couple of hours in with you yesterday.
Oh, we had a great time. He and Joy were kind enough to welcome me and Dan Illman and producers Craig and AJ both into the Upper West Side abode for a couple of hours of telling old stories, talking about his life and time in racing, some of it connected to the amazing memorabilia he has on his walls up there. Part of the session was spent Jerry Seinfeld style retiring some old stories. He says they're retired. We'll see about that. Other parts of the session were spent reminiscing a lot of stuff about Saratoga. The idea is, at some point, somebody mooted the idea of doing a handicapping segment this summer where I would participate with Harvey, and we'd do something ahead of the Saturday races. And then somebody quite wisely suggested, hey, instead of having Fornatale give out the losers every weekend, why don't we just cut to the good stuff and get Harvey on in voice and screen telling some of his greatest hits, and they're going to be packaged in, I guess it will be 7 segments, one heading in to every weekend at Saratoga, and we'll touch on a number of subjects, including some of those old chestnuts and a couple of stories I hadn't heard before and things that hadn't been captured in print before. So there'll be something old and something new with these great segments that are going to be on DRF.com all summer long, featuring Harvey Pack and with me sort of just there as a sounding board. You won't hear much from me. The occasional prompt is all. Mostly, he's a top. You wind him up and you watch him go, and he's still going strong. And you know, had me and Illman and the crew in stitches yesterday, thinking back to some of the great stuff he's seen over the years and reflecting on how the racetrack experience has changed over time.
On that topic, I could tell he was kind of holding back some things because he doesn't want to give away the store before this thing runs.
Good man.
When are they going to run? Do you have a placement?
I believe now that I should confirm this, and if I'm wrong in what I say here, Steve, I will correct it via email and tag you. But I believe it's going to be heading into every weekend at Saratoga now. Little quick turnaround, maybe we're not going to do the first weekend, and then it'll be from next weekend on. But when we get a schedule, I'll make sure to let you know, and would obviously appreciate helping get the word out when a talent like Harvey is out there telling stories, something I love to do, and I know you feel the same way, Steve. You want to just share it with the world and let other people see the magnificence that is him in full flight. And there's also a generation of players now, amazing as this is, I hadn't thought about it till we were sitting there yesterday, but they don't really understand his, like, who he is or what his backstory is or what he's even talking about. You know, today, you want to watch a race, you punch it up on your phone and you watch the race. The idea that several decades ago, no such opportunity was available. And in fact, if you wanted to hear what happened to your bet in the double, you had to wait 20 minutes and tune into WNBC radio to hear this witty guy recreating it from the chart from the DRF. It's it's just so foreign and crazy to even think that that was a world that we lived in so recently, really, in terms of, you know, the world. And I want to help get that point across and just show people something of what that was like and how far we've come.
How did, I don't know if I've ever asked, how did you end up, you know, being teamed up with Harvey? How did that come about?
That came about with the I'll try to do a condensed version of the long story. So there was a summer after my time in book publishing, and I wanted to spend the summer in Saratoga. And there were two ways. I wasn't married at the time, but there were two ways I could pitch it to my serious girlfriend. One was to say, Susan, I'm going to Saratoga for the summer to gamble. And the other was to say, Susan, I'm going to Saratoga for the summer to work for the Daily Racing Form. Now, what at that time working for the Daily Racing Form entailed was helping out with the seminars at Ciro's. And my job was, you know, it was everything from like just helping build the little set and mainly to sit there at the side of the stage and point to Harvey when it came, when the cameras were live and it came time for him to do his spiel. And back then is where I met for the first time many people in racing. Andy Serling was a regular on that show. Dave Grenning was on there all the time. Steve Crist was on there all the time. And, of course, meeting Harvey was one of the great thrills, somebody I'd watched on TV for years, broadcasting legend. And, you know, I don't think he really knew what to make of me at first. But sort of reluctantly, I don't want to say reluctantly, but he was very friendly in his own inimitable way. Let's say it that way, and we hit it off. And then the idea of the book came up, and once we started working on that, I mean, greatest co-writing project of my life. Once again, basically, turn on the tape recorder, let Harvey go, offer the occasional suggestion about form or structure or rarely, but once in a blue moon, word choice, and just let him go. And then that's where we became close, was working on that book for Daily Racing Form Press.
Well, the relationship endures and is just for everybody that has a connection, Andy, obviously as well, you know, and the way you and Andy both are, you know, are so reverential and deferential to Harvey is really speaks volumes.
He's done a lot, you know, for just speaking for myself, done a whole lot for my career. The ability to sort of get the rub from him is something that's made people take notice and has enabled me to meet so many people in the industry. Really, that was one of the key things in terms of expanding my role for Daily Racing Form. I'm sure a lot of people sat up on stage and pointed at Harvey when it was time to talk, and you know, not many of them become full-time employees over there eventually, and I have to give him a lot of credit for that, and he's always helping out with other books I've worked on and just giving professional advice in general. We try to get together, I'd say, every other month up on the Upper West Side and share a meal and talk about the misery that is being a New York Mets fan and trying to really, when you're really lucky, get him to open up and tell stories from his old days at the racetrack and even in Hollywood. He's got some good old Hollywood stories in the book, May the Horse Be With You as well. That was just such a pleasure to work on with him. And I know he's played that role in some other folks' lives as well. And I feel very glad to know him. And it's always a thrill when we get to do something beyond the personal and at least a little bit professional, like that session we put in yesterday. And I'm really excited to get to share those bits and pieces with the world this summer on DRF.com.
Really nice. Well, we'll look forward to these conversations with I won't even call them conversations. This is soliloquies.
Really not.
Stand-up routines, as it were. And I promised. I also promised him. You still have books, right? You still have got some.
Absolutely.
Of the, well, how do people? For those that the last of you out there that don't have, may the horse be with you. How can they get one?
There are a few different ways you can do it. One would be to reach out to me directly. And if you're patient and can wait till after the summer when I see Harvey again, in that instance, we could even get you a signed one. That best way to get me, Twitter, @loomsboldly, or you could email me, podcast@drf.com. That's the easiest way, just because then I don't have to spell my name. So those are two things you can do. You also have the opportunity, I believe there might still be some copies in the DRF store, if you want to go that way. And also, this summer, I'm going to be doing a series of, they're not really seminars, they're just going to be little shows on the second floor of the Carousel on Saturdays from 11 to 11:30. And part of what we're going to be doing there are some giveaways. And I think I might just have a couple of Harvey books that could be included in that. Or if you don't win the giveaway, I could sell them to you on the spot, theoretically, and I will put that money into the Take Harvey to Bellicera on the Upper West Side Fund. But we always do a trip in short order after the meet ends. So lots of different ways to pick up the book. If you haven't read it in a while, check it out. It never fails to make me laugh. It's a good greatest hits collection. And there's also a through line. I mean, Harvey's got an amazing story of somebody very talented who had this sort of quixotic and yet successful quest to make a life in racing, a guy who could have done a whole lot of things in the world of entertainment and chose instead to spend his talents entertaining horse players. I love that aspect of his tale.
Yeah, set a precedent, really, that was just so different. And I was lucky enough to fall under that, you know, that sphere of influence, and taking in the seminars and absorbing the lessons, and that's the best. He's the best kind of professor, the kind
that's
that
right.
Slips in the knowledge while you're not looking.
That's right. The spoonful of sugar that helps the medicine go down, because it's so darn entertaining, because sometimes don't even realize how much you're learning. And another just huge thing, huge influence in my life in terms of helping just keep me in touch with what's so fun about going to the racetrack. It's easy to sometimes get so bogged down in the work that we're doing and trying to get an edge and making money and doing all that stuff. And that's great. And you know, power to anybody for whom that's the major motivating factor of going to the racetrack. But Harvey, and the stories he tells in this little series and in the book, he captures a lot of the fun and the camaraderie. And of course, it's also, we didn't even get into this at all, but really contest play, which has clearly been very good to me and helped me forge my identity at DRF. That's something that emerged from him. And it's kind of interesting. A lot of the stories he tells in the book, the characters, the camaraderie, I feel like in the game in 2018, appropriately enough, the contest world, which he helped inspire, is one of the places where you get to see that stuff all the time. So there's just a lot of different warm associations I have with the man, and always a pleasure to get to spend time with him.
I guess I probably have told this story on air, but it's somewhat business related, but it provides the same parallel to what Harvey does so successfully, and what even the book, I mean, which every chapter starts with one of his axioms, basically one of his rules about horseplay. And when I was working for Procter & Gamble in Kansas City, I got to Kansas City, and you would ride with your manager, and the manager in Kansas City in the food service division was a guy named Stan Gollinghorst, who was a mountain of a man, and it had really gained a reputation at Procter for being an outstanding developer of talent and moving people up into the, you know, to the next levels. And he came out, I remember the first time he came with me on a sales call and observed, and I went through things and made a sale, and They were selling Folgers coffee, which actually was made in Kansas City. J.A. Folgers' plant was San Francisco and Kansas City. And we got back to the car, and Stan said to me, Pete, he said, did you watch the Royals game last night? I said, well, I said, sort of. I said, I was doing some work, and I had it on, you know, I had it on the TV, and you know, if something happened, I'd look up. So why didn't you listen on the radio then? I said, oh. I said, well, you know, home run or double play or, you know, something. And he said, you know, that sale you just made. He said, you didn't show your binder with all the information you were talking about. And you know, we had this sales binder which had, you know, all kinds of materials. And he said, you made a sale on the radio, but you could have had a sale on TV. And let me tell you, the revelation that the way he slipped that in with just so deftly done, and it stayed with me forever. I mean,
that's great.
The fact that it popped in my head, but that's what Harvey could do. You would walk away entertained, and you at some point during maybe that day or weeks later, there'd be a certain spot. There isn't one player, Pete, my age, that you don't hear it said every day at Saratoga, never bet on a horse to do something for the first time.
those laws of the track that are in the book still have a lot of they're very applicable. And when you think about Harvey and I love that story because I love the way it connects to different kinds of media and the way he would use his broadcasting skills to be so good at both. That's not an easy. That's not an easy thing to do, to use whichever medium you're working in to help you heighten the story and make it stick with the viewer. And he obviously the words and the stuff he was doing on the radio back at NBC all the way through, he had that gift. But visual cues, too. Of course, none better than hurling the program at the camera at the end of the show when uttering his signature line. And that's... We got him, of course, talking about that too, and how it came about, and what it meant to him. Hey, that was today. That's over. You don't need that anymore. Let's turn the page and get on to tomorrow when there's another program with 9 winners listed in it, and it's just your job as the horse player to know how to find them, and how he's able to use the medium of television to get that across the same way he's embedded these different ideas in our heads through his words, whether it was on stage or radio over the years. A master of media, like I said before, I think he could have done anything in terms of, I mean, stand-up comedy. I think he could have been a playwright, a screenwriter, whatever it was. I asked him, you know, once, you know, did you think about pursuing another path? And his response was basically, I didn't want to work that hard, and then how would I get to the track every day?
Exactly. Well, that's the plan for a lot of people. How are they going to get to the track for the next 7 weeks? Opening day at Del Mar, Pete, and Friday, Saratoga. Some thoughts and looking ahead to some contest opportunities as well. And your own schedule, which, of course, will be very much Saratoga-laden.
Exactly. I'm going up tonight. I think I'm going to do one quick up and back. I think I want to go to DRF offices next week and pitch in, if I can, in helping edit together the stuff that we recorded yesterday. So it won't be a full 6.5-7 week run in Saratoga, but I'll get up there tonight and really can't wait. We've got a lot of excitement happening. Contest-wise, both tracks have majors. Del Mar comes first. That's the 27th and 28th. Not this weekend, but next weekend. Big live money tournament. I'm not sure if there might still be one more qualifying opportunity for that. Check out tournaments.drf.com to see. But if not, you can still contact Chris Barr at Del Mar and buy your way in. Saratoga, I know we're still qualifying for on DRF tournaments. Those are, it's two separate live bank opportunities, a $1,000 contest on Friday the 10th and a $2,000 contest on Saturday the 11th. First time they've done one, a big one, on a Saturday. I think it's going to be huge. I cannot wait. Still opportunities to qualify for those on tournaments.drf.com. Other exciting things that same week, after the second night of the big sale and before the contest starts, Wednesday night, August 8th, we're going to have a premiere of the World Horse Players Tour TV show. Listeners to At the Races are invited. Reach out to me, and I will send you an invite. I mentioned that last week, and I had several responses, which made me happy. Once again, podcast@drf.com. I'll send you a link, and we'll get you invited to that. But these meets, both of them, they're always the high point of the year for so many players. This year, more than most, I've been so busy, I have not been playing horses anywhere near my usual amount, and I'm very excited to use Saratoga as a reset, and I'm going to probably start slowly, but I look to get back into playing every day, hopefully doing some more writing for the Racing Form, and of course, broadcasting with Jonathan Kinchin, the DRF Players Podcast, twice a week as well, and it's going to be a great summer. How could it not be? I won't get out to Del Mar. It's just too tricky to do both, and I always feel like it's just very hard for me to get on a plane. Like, one thing, to come back to the city for a couple of days, very hard to travel when I have the house upstate. I just sort of want to bunker down there and take that meet as seriously as possible and tilt at some windmills here and try to have a big summer up at Saratoga. Of course, be hanging out at the paddock bar, aka the post bar, most days. Lots of At the Races listeners have come up in the past and said hello. I always encourage people to do that. It's great to get a chance to meet other horse players and get to talk about what makes racing great. And two of those things are Saratoga and Del Mar.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing you, of course, and doing some live conversations leading up to the unspooling, as it were, of the show. And Pete, good luck getting things going here. We'll look for you Friday, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds fantastic. Perrin is excited to have you buy her another donut. She's already talking about it. So we're gonna
get the most important donut of the summer. we'll get that one when she makes her visit. We'll get her on the air. Did she? I can't remember. I don't think we got her on the air, did we?
Yeah, I think she was squawking a little bit, but I think she might be more excited to talk this year. Her interest seems to be increasing, which I'm going to call a very good thing. She's already talking about how she wants to go to the races every day she's up there. So I'll have to explain about the dark day. We might get some tears. But once we get that out of the way, we should be all sunshine and roses.
Nice. Well, in the time we've been talking, I got an order for a book. Our new partner in DT, Steve Carlin. Steve wants a book, so please put it in with your when you're doing your packing.
We'll get it sorted out.
All right. We'll see it for. We'll hook you guys up Friday.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks, Pete.
Thank you, my friend.
Pete Fornatel looms boldly everywhere, on Twitter, on the podcast. Oh, and we didn't. Nick Tamaro had the funniest. I should have brought it up. Nick Tamaro had the funniest tweet about Jonathan yesterday. That was. I'll let Nick. I'll save Friday. Nick can twist the knife. It was pretty funny. Back after a break, we've got a visit coming with Sid Fernando and Gary Young. We'll go out to Del Mar when we are joined by Gary. But let's first get together with Sid and enjoy Sirewatch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Sid Fernando next at the races.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
My baby, don't stand no cheating, my baby. Oh, yeah, she don't stand no cheating, my baby. Oh, yeah, she don't stand no cheating. She don't stand none of that midnight creeping, my baby. True little baby, my baby.
Now, the great little Walter.
My baby.
My baby.
I know she'd love me, my baby.
Don't stand none of that midnight creeping. Sid Fernando, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. I enjoyed your, been enjoying your show today, and I remember I was at Saratoga last year, and it kind of stunned me when Pete was there with his daughter, and then during a break, you made that dash for the donut, and I was like amazed you were able to get a donut and come back so quickly.
I just made, it's the dash for cash. I like the great quarter horse. I just ran down to get a cup of coffee. The same thing.
Yeah.
I got two and a half minutes.
Yeah, exactly. You had timed the break exactly. And if your listeners only knew how you got up, wearing your suit, made that dash, got the coffee and the donut, came back and seamlessly went right back on the air again. My jaw was hanging open.
Well, you should have seen me. You should have seen me when I still smoked, because I used to have to. I used to have to, you know, get a cigarette burned and, you know, in the 2.5 minute window.
Yeah, that's funny. I was with my sidekick Francis Karen at the time.
Yeah,
so we were both. You know, oh, and also by the way, just listening to the whole Pete thing. He made me realize or doubt myself for a second, because he used the word and he pronounced it quixotic. And I don't know if you remember that when he said quixotic. And, you know, I checked the pronunciation of that, and that's how the dictionary pronounces it as well, quixotic. And it made me realize I've been probably using the wrong pronunciation, Quixotic. But of course, Don Quixote is the antecedent, right?
Yes.
And Pete later used tilting at windmills as an expression later on, which is a Don Quixote expression.
Absolutely.
And yes, the pronunciation, quixotic, I guess, is how it's used.
I love it. It's connecting all the dots. Absolutely.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah.
You know, earlier, and I'll ask you. I mean, you and I are about the same age, and so as I said to Harvey Pack, I didn't get a chance to see Manny Ikeza live, only via video and you know, the great opportunities that YouTube affords us in this era to watch, you know, quite a bit. I mean, there's plenty missing, but
right.
any Ikeza thoughts or reflections?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I really started really following the game like in 71, 72 when I was 11 and 12. Manny was kind of coming to the end of his career at that point. Of course, you know, as a student of history of the game, I've followed him. He had a brief reappearance in the early 80s. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah.
But
83, 84.
Yeah. But really the big thing about Manny that I remember, you know, as his historical significance in a way that some of your listeners might not, was that it was Captain Harry Guggenheim, Kane Hoy Stable, that he was really the retained rider for. You know, I think he rode, well, Manny really started riding, I think, late 50s here, and his career was probably over about, probably in the early 70s, right? So, Captain Guggenheim died 69-70. So for the majority of that time, he really was, the contract rider for Kane Hoy, which meant, of course, that he rode Bald Eagle for Kane Hoy. Who else? Never Bend.
Never Bend, yeah.
Never Bend, second in the Derby. Of course, he rode Battle Joined, the sire of Ack-Ack, and he rode Ack-Ack, too.
He rode Ack-Ack, too, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so, of course, you know, he rode for other riders, too. He won the first Philly Triple Crown, and let me just stress here, it wasn't the Philly Triple Tiara, it was the Philly Triple Crown, the Acorn.
True,
other
that's true. I said
Oak.
Tiara, yep.
Yeah, no, not everybody kind of uses that now because the Triple Tiara having more prominence, but he rode Dark Mirage. And of course, you know, that iconic photo of him on Rydan fighting with Johnny Rotz on Greek Money, which was published, I think it might have even, you know, all the major, outside of main publication, mainstream publications, they're battling down the stretch, and the two of them are fighting. Obviously known. I saw your tweet earlier about his the fines and offenses against him, which made me chuckle. But you know, he was a fiery rider, known for that, apparently was a gentleman outside the track. But he's one of those guys between the lines. He's gonna leave it all on there, you know.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
There's been a few things that have cropped, and that list that John White provided from Turf and Sport Digest 1970 is hysterical, and some people have really, you know, had a fun time looking at some of the, you know, the offenses. That one of them was talking in the post parade, which who knew? I mean, that was an issue. So there was that, and you know, every jock has had, you know, a display of temper or, you know, altercation in the jock's room and those kinds of things. One of the funniest actually was in fact, I'm going to pull it up because I want to read it verbatim because it's unbelievable. Where is it? Here we go. He must have been upset because he insulted Rex Ellsworth. It reads, imputation upon the character of Mr. Rex Ellsworth, the owner of the winning horse in said race, his trainer, Mr. Tenney, Mesh Tenney, and his riders, Messrs. Marino, Hartack, and Shoemaker.
Oh, that's funny.
He obviously went on a verbal tirade that very funny. I got the biggest kick out of this, and a lot of people did. Not to mention, you know, looking at the places where he rode. I mean, Atlantic City, and you do notice how much, and of course he was. He was riding at that point when Belmont was being remodeled and Aqueduct had to host, you know, all the racing downstate during
the renovation. And that was a project of Captain Guggenheim.
Well, and you bring that up. It's so funny in the way that last week I managed to, you know, presage the piece you wrote at TDN, and what you just talked about, Leslie Knopf had written me here in the last hour and had a link to a Whitney Tower piece about Captain Guggenheim and Kane Hoy. So there's a lot of, I'll send you the link. It's great. And yesterday I was poking around the Sports Illustrated vault, found that piece by Bill Leggett talking about the Latino, you know, the early influx of Latin riders. And there's so much great material at the SI Vault, and the race writing in particular is just tremendous.
Yeah, no, that's a great resource. And, you know, I was just reminded, again, it's funny how things work out, but I just tweeted the other day about how from the Guggenheim dispersal, somebody had tweeted this guy who puts some really nice historical stuff on Twitter about Riverman being purchased at the 69 Guggenheim dispersal by Alec Head, how we became a leading sire, whatnot. And I just have to point out also from that dispersal was Sansan. Philly purchased for $15,000 by Countess Margit Batiani, who won the Arc in 72. So when you look at Kane Hoy and Captain Guggenheim's legacy, we went out in a absolute crescendo because you had Riverman, you had Sansan, and then you had Ak-Ak, who was later transferred to Greer Garson, the actress, and her husband, Buddy Fogelson, of the Fork Lightning Ranch, who raced Ak-Ak in his Horse of the Year season out in California, and of course all Captain Guggenheim's legacy, and you know, tied in with the fact what we're talking about today was. It all started off for the duo of Guggenheim and Manny with Bald Eagle, who went back to back DC Internationals, and Bald Eagle was the sire of Sansan.
Bald Eagle fits a similar profile, and in fact, that kind of a set of connections, not dissimilar from another horse that he was successful with that you don't really hear much about, despite, you know, a very good racing career, including a Belmont win, and that's Quadrangle. And much like Kane Hoy, you know, this is Rokeby and Paul Mellon and Elliot Birch. You know, it's that same kind of you know, elite set of connections. And Quadrangle went on to a terrific stallion career and got a handful of champions. Susan's Girl comes to mind, but he's not a stallion for whatever reason that you really hear about. I mean, it kind of, for whatever reason, right? I never hear somebody referencing back. I mean, there's plenty of stallions from the 60s that get referred to. And for whatever reason, maybe, did he not get a big sun?
That's usually the case, and it's ironic because Manny also rode for E.P. Taylor, but for Rokeby, when he rode Quadrangle, of course, he derailed Northern Dancer. You know,
that's right, and that's right. The '64 Belmont,
right? And as you referenced, you know, Susan's Girls and whatnot, Quadrangle really became a sire of fillies and had a part in the internal parts of Pedigrees, which is not the top line. You know, when you go back and you look at that era, it's interesting because even when you look at Ack, for example, Ack had a great stallion career and of course got Broad Brush. His legacy extended past Guggenheim with Nelson Bunker Hunt getting youth. Also, you know, the European Derby winner. But that line, Steve, and Manny actually rode Ack, we said Battle Joined, and Battle Joined Sire Armageddon. They were all Kane Hoy horses, and it was a distinctly American line, like the Man of War line. This line was the line of Domino through Commando through Colin. Very rare line. It was hanging by a razor thin edge that really was only Captain Guggenheim that was keeping it alive. Al Saab. That entire line, both those stallions, Armageddon and his son Battle Joined, both stood at Spencer Farm. Captain Guggenheim at this point had kept that line alive, and it kind of died poetically with Ack, with his, you know, final flourish. He had a great stallion career, but his sons never went on too, in a parallel to what we were talking about with Quadrangle. But it's pretty amazing when you go back and you look at owners, riders, the history of the game, and the threads to threads linking people and, you know, their runs through history.
I'm looking at a couple of others that, and I brought the names up yesterday, but you know, the Phillies, and I mentioned as well to Harvey Pack, you know, Gamely and Lamb Chop that he rode, Dark Mirage, and you know, for those that haven't seen the Jay Hovde piece, just terrific. It goes back about 2 weeks, and Jay kind of achingly last night sent out a very good piece of advice on Twitter. He sent a link to the story. Yeah, and he said, you know, 3 weeks ago I picked up the phone, called Manny Ikeza. He answered. We had a fabulous conversation. Jay wrote the piece about Dark Mirage and Hovde exhorting people, call, pick up a phone if there's somebody you think of, whether they're at a tender age or not.
Great piece of advice. I liked that tweet right away as soon as I saw it.
Really thoughtful.
Jay tweets very infrequently, but they're poignant when he does tweet. And, you know, I follow him and he follows me, and I have an appreciation of his tweets. They're poignant, and that was a particularly poignant tweet, especially since he just said, as you pointed out, he called and they'd spoken about Dark Mirage.
And whatever the impetus, if it's a birthday, if it's a birthday, it could be people that you went to school with, you grew up around, it could be a cousin, whatever, when they come across your mind, whether you're gonna write a brilliant column or not, go ahead and call and hear their voice and let them hear yours. It was a really good message from Hovde. And as you say, Hovde doesn't abuse the privilege of having access to people. He doesn't
abuse Twitter either, like I do.
Well, your drum beating has an important message in whatever direction you're choosing. It's well received. Let's put it that way, at least by me.
Well, thanks. I haven't lost too many followers this last week, so I take that as a good sign.
Well, they already left. The ones that we're going to leave have already left, Sid.
That's true.
I gotta gather myself. I'm sorry. You made me laugh.
By the way, if you heard that voice, it's that machine, that Alexa thing. I apologize. Just started talking.
Well, we've had that same problem here. We got a new Spectrum came and delivered new modem and router, and so the machine keeps asking, you know, for the internet connection, and
exactly.
It's like, what do you? It's very funny that it's like this person in your house that you didn't really invite. It was given as a gift.
That's exactly what happened here. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, okay, we'll see what we can do. Separately, said back to your piece from last week, because you literally the next day in TDN had expanded on the Mill Ridge piece, and it was kind of funny because I was very much unprompted that I brought up the Oscar performance signing, and then no sooner did that happen, I noticed the fact even today at Del Mar there's a Chandler bread that Shug McGahee co-bred, in fact, out of Keeper Hill, running today in that starter allowance ninth. But
right.
You touched on, you know, for those that missed last week or didn't see Sid's piece in TDN, you know, Mill Ridge re-entering the stallion business. And it's kind of an interesting theme. I didn't realize that has happened more than I realized in terms of some farms kind of floating in, and then when a potential prominent stallion goes away, they don't feel under any obligation necessarily to, you know, to replace, to become a commercial outfit.
Right.
Which is interesting. Right. It's a different approach.
Yeah, Mill Ridge has, you know, been a kind of a boutique operation, standing, you know, Dices and Gone West, of course, notable world-class stallions. What's also, you know, a big part of that is the family history. Mrs. Chandler, Alice Chandler, of course, daughter of Hal Price Heedley, fact, Hal Price Heedley's nephew, Duval Heedley, is the breeder of Dark Mirage, who we just mentioned as another link back. Duval Heedley also bred Tom Fool. But, you know, it's a big family, sixth generation now, and it had been Heedley Bell, who's Alice Chandler's son, had called me to tell me about the stallion going to stud, and, you know, I'd noted to write my column on it, and as frequently happens, you brought up unprompted, unscripted, the exact column, so I find that I preview a lot of stuff on the weeks. I write an every other week column for TDN. It's uncanny because it seems that I kind of preview the column on your show more often than not. Actually, most of the time, because you tend to bring it up.
Yeah, it's just my topics so often for you and for Dr. Allday, it's, you know, the proverbial rip from today's headlines, you know, much like
right.
much like the discussion Manny Ikeza and you know, something that happened, you know, this week or, you know, within the last couple of days. We certainly, Sid, are looking forward to the summer meets and the emergence. It is interesting that as soon as we get to Saratoga and Del Mar, that's when the fancy pedigrees, when it comes to the two-year-olds, they basically are generally withheld, and then all of a sudden you start to get, you know, the steady drumbeat of them now, and it didn't take long. I mean, we've got this filly race today at Del Mar, that seventh race, where you've got the $1.1 million Brill for Larry Best, and then he's got the older maiden later on the card, too, in the nightcap. But this is really rubber meets the road time when it comes to the two-year-olds and close eyes on the first crop stallions. And one of the things that is always fun is to maybe catch on and get out ahead of a mm-hmm. of a stallion that turns out to be a win early first crop and flashback off to a pretty notable start with just a handful of runners, two first out winners, I think, from his first four debuting runners.
Yeah, young son of Tappet at Hillendale, owned by Gary and Mary West. You know, he's got the look of a horse that's going to get some early horses as well. You know, he's a smallish, a gray, well-put-together individual. I saw him at Hillendale when he first retired. And, you know, a horse that's good at a very affordable fee, you know, $5,500. So this is a really good time, as you point out, to not only watch for the big pedigrees and the big prices, whether they were yearlings or two-year-olds. It's also a really good chance to cash in and catch a wave with some under the radar horses, flashback being one, some cheaper horses, to use the word for just the fact that their stud fees were cheap. And sometimes what you'll get early in these meets at Del Mar and Saratoga, you'll get the cheap horse. Again, just by stud fee, those horses popping and trying to take advantage of some of the better bred horses that might pick up steam later on. So we're seeing, for example, aside from Flashback, you've noticed Golden Sense, for example, speed horse by Into Mischief. He struck. In fact, I think by my money earnings, he might be leading the two-year-old sire list. But another horse to keep an eye on is the horse at Ocala Stud, Uncaptured. He's percolating a bit. I think he might have a filly in Schuylerville. He's a horse, again, a typical Florida type of horse. He was a top two-year-old. He was a horse of the year or two in Canada. He's a horse to keep an eye on as well. So these types of horses are going to be in the mix, and their best opportunities are to strike early right now. If they have any legs, i.e. staying power, they'll be around later on. But they make their money right now. And a lot of guys know that this is the time to pop with them. So while you're looking at the big pedigrees, keep an eye out for some of these lesser heralded horses that showed speed, particularly from Florida, that had good two-year-old sales and appear to be favored by horsemen. That's a really good clue. And two-year-old sales are a really good indication of, generally speaking, how well a horse's progeny are developing. Just by being in a two-year-old sale means that they have the constitution, the mental capacity, the maturity to be ready early. And check two-year-old sales results, because that's a great handicapping angle. You're going to pick some horses up.
Very much. And Uncaptured, you're just looking at some Thoroughgraph sire stats, has had six horses make the races so far, including this Catherine the Great, who runs from the rail for Mark Cassie and Jack Oxley. And smashing last out winner at Gulfstream by 10 lengths. Uncaptured, six horses have made the races. They've had nine starts, and they've won three, and they've hit the board six times. So Uncaptured, absolutely starting off with a bang. Flashback, the next runner will also be at Saratoga, and it's Aqua Riva in the State Bred second. Tomorrow or Friday at Saratoga. Mm-hmm. Turf Sprint for Bobby Roboto and Mark Keller. This was a Hidden Lake bred Aqua Riva, two-year-old filly out of Boatman
Road. In the case of Flashback, Steve, some important inside information to understand about him is that Gary and Mary West retained full ownership of this horse. And they were determined to make this horse. So their racing manager, Ben Glass, early on bought a lot of mares. Mares that were of quality that may not necessarily have gone to a $5,000 stallion. Just specifically to have this horse set up properly. So the mares were bought to get good foals out of those mares, and then they were either sold or sold in foal, or the foals were sold later. But they made a concerted effort to make sure that this young horse was fairly well represented, and well represented by the quality of mares he may not necessarily have gotten. So keep that in mind, too, when you're evaluating Flashback, because we'll probably start to see even more winners pop up with him.
And that, that's one of the remarkable aspects of tracking stallions and the... I guess prepotency is the right word. A horse that, obviously, what happened with Kitten's Joy, for instance, because in the same way, that Ken Ramsey went out and he claimed every nickel Philly and mare that he could find and to build a, what, 125-head broodmare band to bring to Kitten's Joy. And he fashioned, yeah. You know, he believed in Kitten's Joy's potential, and then it proved out. And he, it's actually one of the most amazing stories in recent breeding history, frankly. But that
it really is,
right? I mean, it's we see this from, and you mentioned Florida. You do see this. I mean, the ones that have graduated, Cantheros, that is now with John Secura at Hill and Dale. We've seen. Well, to me, a stallion like Wildcat Air. I mean, that I loved him, and I love Disco Rico. I mean, these are stallions. Roddy Valenti with Bustin' Stones, who, you know, is getting backyard mares and getting runners. It's an interesting subset of the breeding industry because it's people that aren't breeding commercially, they're breeding to race, and you know the stallion and clearly Sons of Tappet have got an edge. I mean, Tappet is he's just passing it along in every direction.
Yeah, he obviously has a lot of good sons coming up. Funnily enough, one of the sons that hit early and is no longer in this country, but he was on the inexpensive end, was Colleen Shaw's horse, Concord Point.
Yep.
Who stood at Hill and Dale.
Yep.
And Shaw, similarly to the Ramseys, but not with the same volume and with actually higher quality mares, bred some of those horses that are the big ones, like American Gal. Many times, if you look at a horse, you see the owner involvement still with that horse. You know, you can pretty much guarantee that you know they're going to be have a say to try to make that stallion. In the case of Kitten's Joy, as you pointed out, it really is one of the great modern success stories because it was a very shrewd maneuver, and I mean shrewd in the positive sense of very, very calculated and smart maneuver to utilize this horse. It was a grass horse, which they were very much out of favor at the time, but the Ramseys, you know, realized that the climate was going all weather at that time, more turf involved, and they spotted the progeny of those horses. They bred some in Canada, they bred some in various state programs. They took advantage of the turf all weather scenario, and in recent history it was a pretty phenomenal accomplishment because Kitten's Joy led the general sire list in 2013 with predominantly all weather and turf horses, which is kind of unheard of in a climate that's based foremost on dirt racing. So as the all-weather receded and turf has increased, you know, look at the Del Mar meet, turf heavy. Look at Saratoga and New York. The whole climate is going more towards turf racing. 40% of the graded stakes races are turf. The number of turf horses is the infrastructure for maidens and allowance horses on turf is increased dramatically. In fact, it's one of the reasons why, getting back to Heedley Bell and Mo Ridge and Oscar Performance, the son of Kitten's Joy, why they feel fully confident in standing this horse because of the opportunities the climate presents. And many times It's looking at the climate, looking at something 3 to 4 years down the road, and guessing correctly that you have the right product for it.
Well, we've got a big summer ahead, Sid, and we'll start to let the stories write themselves. And certainly starts today, for instance, at Del Mar, with that, in particular, with that seventh race. Looking forward to seeing if Brill is, if she's the nuts, as they say. If we can't talk about it right now, maybe we'll use it for next week, but it does feel, you know, for all the horses got to go out and do it, and there's also Gorin making the move to the grass in the 10th, but Larry Best seems to be getting some return. You know, he's getting some horses to run, and you know, he's waiting for the big horse, and it feels like his strategy, you know, as much money as he spent, may pan out yet.
He made a big capital investment, he's starting to make a little noise with some of these horses. All he needs is, all you need is one big horse anywhere. I mean, at the highest level, we saw that with a horse like Justify, One big horse, just pretty much makes your business.
This filly,
preferably a stallion, but a good mare as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and people already making suggestions about Hollendorfer and Del Mar and Medaglia d'Oro fillies coming in with Buzz. There was one a few years ago that did okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Songbird. I love it. Sid, we're going to see you in a couple of weeks. Yes.
Yeah, I'll be. In fact, I just tried to book a room today at the Brentwood Hotel, but it's all booked up.
Well, a good.
I'll have to find another place.
Well, for those, I make certain. At this time, it starts to get very tough. But we could see if we can't find a couple of options for you. Do you want to stay in town?
Yeah, you shoot me a line.
Yeah, do you want to stay right in town? Is that?
Yeah, I'd like to. I think I'm going to come up the 2nd to the 7th or 8th.
Okay. All right, we will. There is the landmark. I mean, I always push the landmark up toward on the Glens Falls side, exit 17 off the Northway, about just 10-12 minutes from the track, and you can't beat the price. I mean, they got a fixed price.
Oh, really?
They
don't, the landmark?
Yeah, okay. Landmark is great. Take a look, see if they, and it's all horse players, and fans that, and you can also, because you're taking the bike up, yes?
Yeah, I'll be right.
Well, then you buzz up to Lake George. You can, take advantage of everything.
Oh, sounds
the landmark.
Good.
All right.
Okay.
There's my push.
All right.
Sid Fernando, everybody. Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. And if you're going to see Sid up at Saratoga, he'll do a live thing with me as well. We'll do that again this year. Say hello. Distinctive look. And work with him with your mares. Get ready for breeding season. Not shockingly, less than 6 months away. Back after a break, we'll go up to Maine. Seth Merrow joins us next. Gary Young at the bottom of the hour.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then Briznet.com has you covered
with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrisNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrisNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrisNet.com/APR. The BrisNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrisNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrisNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 388-4643.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.